This is Rusty Tanton.
And Amber Ray.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
It's August 7th, and we are here at San Francisco Coffee on Highland Avenue with...
Andy Scott.
And you are a photographer, yes?
I am.
You had a show at iDrum recently. What was that all about?
It was pictures I took of the compound of the United Nation of Nubian Moors, which was a cult that operated in Georgia for about 15 years.
And I've actually been there, too. Probably, you said it was a little before you went there. And I can attest it is a very creepy place. I got a very creepy vibe from just driving by and seeing it from outside the fence. Can you, for people who might not know, can you talk a little bit about what the place looked like and what impressions you got?
And maybe who they are in case.
And who they are,
know,
yeah.
We'll start with who they are. They were a group that came down from Brooklyn, New York in the 1990s. And for reasons that no one has ever quite figured out, they bought a piece of land in Putnam County, Georgia, which is just out in dairy country. It's very rural. They had no prior connections to the area. And they relocated their operation down there. It was an African-American group. They were actually black separatists. They believed that whites were inherently evil. They had this bizarre mix of theologies, but sort of the dominant theme was Egyptian. And they built on this piece of property that they bought out in Putnam County this huge sort of fake Egyptian-themed kind of theme park that had giant pyramids and statues, and it was all made out of paper mache, and none of it was very permanent, and now it's all been torn down.
What I noticed when I was looking at your photos and at Amber's photos and other photos I've seen is there's this juxtaposition between all this old Egyptian-looking stuff and then all these modern fixtures. There's, you know, normal toilets and light switches, and it kind of looked like a mini golf course to me, honestly.
You know, I do love mini golf courses too. I photographed those
as
well.
Who doesn't love mini golf?
But yeah, it was. They sort of had the beginnings of all the iconography, but they didn't really integrate it very well, and you're right, it had all these incongruous looking modern fixtures sort of plopped down in the middle, like nice porcelain urinals in the middle of their Egyptian temples and such.
Right, and that's what your photographs seem to really capture, was that juxtaposition.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was an easy thing to latch onto there. It was the place was so strange that in a way it was hard to photograph. It's kind of hard to pick out the pieces of it that you wanted to point the camera at and isolate those and make sense of it.
And for people who might not know, just give a little background on why the place ended up being abandoned.
The leader of the cult was a fellow named Malachi York. He had various entanglements with the law through the years, but what ultimately got him convicted and sent to jail was a massive child molestation ring that he was running there at the cult. I think it was the biggest child molestation case that's ever been brought in Georgia. And he was molesting the cult members' children. And in some cases, he was molesting his own children from the children that he had molested earlier.
Wow.
He was convicted in federal court, and in the wake of that conviction, and he was sentenced to 135 years. In the wake of the conviction, the government seized the compound as what's called a criminal forfeiture action. And they held on to it for a couple of years, and finally they wound up selling it to a developer in the summer of 2005, and he went and tore everything down. I think the developer realized that it was going to be a magnet for the remaining members of the cult, and he was going to have problems with security until he could get rid of all the buildings. So he knocked it all down.
And that knowledge of the horrible things that went on there kind of just really amplifies just the creepy feeling, and just not it just being a weird place architecturally and, you know, in terms of religious beliefs, but just, I mean, like the most striking image of your photographs that were iDrum was the one with the little kid's bike, like, parked right in front of the pyramid thing. It just, it's really unnerving, you know, knowing what went on.
One of the pictures in iDrum was taken in the bedroom where supposedly he did a lot of the molesting. It was pictures of little gold statues that were on the bed.
Oh, yeah.
That was always in the back of my mind when I was there. Not necessarily in the back of my mind. It was always in front of my mind.
Right.
This was, as silly as it all might seem, first of all, there were people who sincerely believed in all this stuff. This was a holy site for them. And second, that they had been betrayed by their leader, who had taken advantage of his position to molest the children of the group. And there's a book out about that cult called Ungodly. It was written by a former Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter named Bill Osinski. If you read the book, it's clear that the huge numbers of these children are still sort of, you know, trying to put their lives back together in the wake of what happened to them there.
And so what happened to all the cult members that were living there?
When the government seized the place, it gave them a week or so to get their personal effects off the property. I'm unclear of the details, but I think in that sort of action, they seized the property and they seized the permanent attachments, and then there were 100 or so cult members living on the property, and their personal stuff, their TVs or clothes, they could take with them. And so I've heard from the sheriff in Putnam County that in that week there was just frantic activity where they were just packing up and boxing up everything they possibly could, hauling it away. There were some semi-trucks they brought on. They loaded up. The leader of the cult, Malachi York, you know, he treated himself pretty well. He fancied himself an R&B singer. He had built a state-of-the-art recording studio. He had a 24-track recording studio there. And they boxed most of that stuff up, took it away. And he had a house there on the compound that he lived in that I'm sure had nice stuff in that. That all got boxed up and taken away. But it was about 40 acres of buildings that they were trying to clean out in a week. And of course, they just couldn't get everything.
Right.
So there was still lots and lots of stuff there. You remarked on the fact that there was there were toys still around. It was strewn all over the place. And yeah, there were personal effects just everywhere. Back when I was photographing there, even though it had been empty for well over a year, I found at one point I stepped on an electric toothbrush that still had a charge in it. The thing started buzzing under my foot. I thought I'd stepped on a snake.
Oh, God. That's scary.
it was kind of like going to a place that had been hit by a neutron bomb. There were still clothes in the closets, food in the refrigerators.
You talked earlier, before we turned on the recorder, about the process of getting approval to go into the compound because it was fenced off and the FBI had closed it off. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. While they were still there, a couple of times I stopped by and visited with them. It was a bizarre-looking place, and I wanted to get in a photograph while I was occupied and was told politely but firmly that I was not welcome there. So when it was abandoned, when it was cleaned out, I started working on getting permission to go in there. And as it turned out, there were a half dozen or more law enforcement agencies that had some sort of jurisdiction over the place. There was the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and the sheriff down there in Putnam County. And I think a couple of others. I think the Georgia Attorney General got into the act at one point. So I started working my way through all those guys and women, and finally, after a long time, I think they decided I was okay and let me go in.
And that was about a year, the whole process?
It seemed like beginning to end, it took about a year, yeah.
I know that the sheriff of Putnam County just attested the property and everything that, you know, all the scandal and everything. And I heard, because I followed it a bit, and my mom would send me newspaper clippings and stuff, that he was actually driving the bulldozer that knocked everything down.
He got the honorary first whack.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, I think so. I wasn't there that day. I wish I could have been. But, the first day that they started demolition, I guess the developer, you know, knowing what the history was, invited the sheriff, his name is Howard Sills, to come and drive the bulldozer.
Yeah.
And there's a picture that ran in the local paper down there of Sheriff Sills. He had a big cigar in his teeth, smiling, driving this huge bulldozer, ramming into the front gate.
I think my mom sent me that newspaper clipping, actually.
Yeah.
It was just interesting always because, especially when I was living in Athens, I followed it a little more because it was closer, and they had sort of an outpost in Athens. They had a building in downtown Athens.
Which I've seen.
Yeah,
I'm a little confused about this, but at some point, the leader, Malachi York, I think decided he wanted to live in a bigger city, being out in the pastures of Putnam County wasn't entertaining enough for him.
Right.
So he bought a house in Athens and kept his house at the compound, but I think spent most of his time up in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
And they founded, as you know, sort of an office outpost, which they also decorated in Egyptian
theme. Very elaborate.
Yeah. There in downtown Athens. They had branches in some other cities, too. I think they had a branch in Macon, and I believe some other large cities.
Milledgeville, because we were in Milledgeville, and we went by, and there was a store that was all closed down, but it was called All Eyes on Egypt.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the place in Athens was called, too.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. would be part of the group.
Yeah.
But I think they also had outposts, I want to say, maybe in Philadelphia.
Oh.
Maybe in Washington, D.C.
How did you first get interested in this project?
Well, it's hard not to want to take pictures of that place when you saw it. I think you had the impulse yourself.
Right.
Said you took pictures and put in them Flickr. Everybody I know who's seen it has wanted to go back there and see what it was like. It's such an amazing looking place and such a remarkable thing, particularly to find out in the middle of rural Georgia.
Well, it's so unique, and now it's gone. And even at the time when I became interested in photographing it, I had a feeling that this isn't going to be around much longer,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that should be documented.
Well, it was built to... it was not built to last.
Right.
In fact, some of the construction there, some of the ornamentation was actually done by a Mardi Gras float maker. They hired a guy from New Orleans to come up and do it.
Wow.
And, you know, in true Mardi Gras float fashion, it was sensational to look at, but it was meant to last not very long.
That's what the thing at iDrum said, the description said it wouldn't last a summer without constant upkeep.
Well, and I wrote that description. When I got there, it had been sitting unattended for a year, and it was starting to fall apart all on its own. In fact, some of the pictures that iDrum were of the buildings collapsing.
Yeah.
That was before demolition started. They were just, you know, rotting and falling down. It was mostly built out of particle board, you know, interior grade particle board that dissolves when it gets wet. And it was that synthetic stucco that they sell at Home Depot.
Right.
I think it's called Drive-It. And a lot of chicken wire.
Yeah.
And they fashion this stuff out of these materials and sort of sculpt these statues and really elaborate ornamentation into that. Spectacular to look at, but it wasn't going to last very long.
Now this sort of goes along with other photography projects you've done, right? Have you done photography of other abandoned things before, right?
Yeah, I don't seek it out consciously, but looking back over the pictures, mm-hmm. yes, that's been a recurring theme.
What kind of other places have you photographed?
oh, I've been taking pictures for so many years. I did a big series of abandoned industrial sites. I actually did that for the Smithsonian. I did a series of abandoned public spaces like schools and courthouses that are no longer being used. Went out to Milledgeville. You mentioned Milledgeville. Yeah. And photographed the Georgia Central States Hospital down
there.
Oh, yeah?
We were just there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's, as you know, what used to be just an immense mental institution.
Right.
I think it had 50,000
It was
patients.
The second largest in the world
for a while.
Yeah, inmates. And now it's, I think it's just got a couple of hundred. And
yeah.
Parts of it are prisons, and parts of it are now just, you know, falling down.
Now, when did you go there?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Again, the process for getting permission to photograph in a mental institution is pretty elaborate.
Did you go inside the buildings?
Yes.
And anything weird happened to you while you were there?
I know some of them were supposed to be haunted.
Yeah.
And I had a guard escort who was showing me around. And short answer is no. No more so than you get in any old abandoned building. I mean, one of the buildings, apparently there was a way for birds to get in and squirrels to get in. They couldn't find their way out, so it was full of skeletons, full of bird skeletons.
Wow, creepy.
And such, but nah, none of the lights or voices or any of the things that I've read
on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, but it's got to be haunted. I mean, if you believe in that stuff, it's just got to be.
No ghostly apparitions.
Indian burial ground.
It's built on top of an old Indian burial ground.
Stories of
first
torture.
Of all.
Oh, okay.
And it's an old mental institution where they did, like, experiments on patients. It's got to be haunted. But yeah, we were there.
Just by default.
We were there a couple weeks ago, and it was very cool, but it was very creepy. We didn't get out of the car. We just drove around and took pictures out of the car, but it was very creepy.
I think, unless you have somebody with the key, you're pretty much seeing everything you can see from the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think since I've been there, one of the buildings, the old nurse's dormitory, they've put plywood up on all the windows. So I think it's pitch black dark inside. You couldn't photograph there anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I think one of the other buildings, the roof has gotten to the point where water's completely gone through the building. The floors are rotting out. You can't go in there anymore.
That's a shame. I feel like they should preserve that, you know, it's historic.
Well, they did loan out lots of those buildings for years to municipal functions in Milledgeville and other state agencies, and of course, as many of them as they could, they turned into prisons. As you know, on the grounds of the old hospital, there are now four or five prisons that sort of fenced off. Yeah. But some of those buildings, they're probably loaded with asbestos and they're loaded with lead paint.
Yeah. Still, it just
all the bad stuff.
Yeah,
well,
all the bad stuff.
And the ghosts, but
and the ghosts.
Homeless
people, former patients.
It just seems like, I mean, it is a historic place. I mean,
yes, it is.
And the thing that we noticed is that even though it is still, parts of it are still in use, as we drove around, it just felt, the whole place just felt deserted and dead.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I noticed that too. I was surprised, I guess. You know, the people who are still patients there, I think, are mostly in the main administration building.
That big white building.
It's the huge white antebellum-looking building, although I don't think it's really antebellum.
Yeah.
And I would think that they would, you know, they would get out. The grounds are pretty. But you're right. All the times I've been there, I've never seen anybody out doing anything except mowing the grass or...
And there were some cars, a few cars. We also it was also a Sunday when we went.
Yeah.
But still, the whole place just felt deserted. But it was also, I knew it was big before we went, but I was just amazed at just how huge. It's like, it was like a college campus or a small town of its own.
Well, if it had 50,000 patients, plus all the people necessary to take care of those patients, that's not a small town.
It's a medium-sized town.
It's a good-sized town.
Yeah. Well, so what, that's kind of, it's kind of interesting that those are the kinds of places you photographed versus the Nuwabians, because it's like, these are places that are very enduring versus a place that's very impermanent.
And I don't mean to sound like I consciously seek out abandoned stuff or that's all that I photograph. I take pictures of people, all sorts of things. But you asked about whether that is a theme that comes up again and again in my work, and I would say, in fairness, yes,
yeah.
Although it's not certainly not exclusively what I do. Again, the Nuwabians, that compound, I think anybody with a camera would have exactly the same impulse I had, which is, got to take a picture of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just lucky enough to get pretty good access for a fairly extended time.
Well, do you have any plans of other projects coming up in the future?
I'm working on a couple of things now. I'm trying to finish up that project on the public spaces that I mentioned earlier. You just get that stuff printed and finalized. Photographing the Nuwabians sort of made me think about folks who assume alternate identities. And that, in a very indirect way, led me to Civil War reenactors.
Oh, cool.
So I've been hanging out with them recently.
Interesting.
And they're an interesting group of people. And then, you know, I take pictures of vacations and all the things people normally take pictures of,
right.
But that's not really, that's not a big project. That's not a big art project.
It's a life project.
That's right.
Have we mentioned the books?
Is there, do you have a book, or did I mishear that?
There is a book by Bill Osinski that has a few of my photographs in it.
Okay.
I am working on doing a book of, like, a coffee table book of pictures of Nuwabia.
Okay.
So that's in the process.
That must be why I couldn't find it, because it doesn't exist yet.
No, it does not exist.
Okay, well, do you have any other questions? Any final thoughts or anything you'd like to add?
Thank you very much for talking to me.
All right, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.